Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 153 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, hashtag me too, a la a guy. This is going to be such a great episode, but before we begin, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. You won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review us, because I'm sitting here waiting to hear from you. Yeah, your feedback's that important. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Now listen, you'd have to be seriously from another planet just arriving this second not to know what a hashtag Me Too is all about. And to understand the amazing sort of tsunami of a revolution that's happened because of what's been going on emanating from Hollywood now all over the world, all about sexual harassment, what goes on with women and how they're treated in multiple platforms in life. And so I'm trolling along in the New York Times and I read this amazing article, Me Too Men Consent Pledge. What? Men are finally hopping on board. What's that about? And we're so happy and blessed to have Michael Ellsberg, who was the subject of that entire New York Times piece, on with us today as the expert to tell us about, well, a revolution he's starting, all beginning with a consent. Now, Michael is the creator of the Consent Pledge for Men, recently featured in the New York Times, as I mentioned. He's the author of The Education of Millionaires, The Power of Eye Contact, and co-author of The Last Safe Investment. Now, what's also interesting is, well, maybe you have to be a certain age, but, I think Michael may have learned about taking a stand at an early age because his father is the famous Daniel Ellsberg, the former military analyst who leaked the Pentagon Papers in the early 1970s. And this is a story that was recounted in Steven Spielberg's Oscar-nominated film, The Post. So, you know something? I think Michael learned the honest way from Daddy-O. So, Michael, welcome to the Her podcast.
Dr. Peek, thank you so much for having me and for giving me the opportunity to share. I'm really excited to be here with you.
Well, Michael, tell us what happened. How did all of this start? You know, clearly this is a really maverick move on your part, this consent pledge, which you'll explain to us. But tell us where all this came from.
Sure. Well, like most people, as you mentioned in your intro, the Me Too movement, which started in early October, really made an impression on me. And I knew within a day or two when I saw how many people, how many women were sharing very moving and challenging stories on Facebook. It was mostly on Facebook that I saw it, including female friends of mine sharing these stories that I had no idea. I mean, I didn't consider myself particularly naive about the challenges and the violence that women face in the world. And still, I had no idea that so many of my friends, for example, had gone through these horrendous experiences, one after the other after the other. So it made a big impression on me. And I started thinking, okay, well, what can I do to be a part of changing the culture that is leading to so many of these stories happen to these people? And I wasn't really sure. I didn't know what a proper, appropriate men's response to this would be. But I was reading a lot and thinking and kind of, thinking what would be the right way. And when the Aziz Ansari story hit, and I don't know if your listeners are familiar, but Aziz Ansari is a very famous comedian. He had a show on Netflix And it came out that a young woman recounted a date that they had been on that ended very badly, and he had pressured her and been very aggressive about wanting to sleep with her. And she had come away feeling, even though they didn't have intercourse, she came away feeling that basically she had been assaulted. And when I read that, I was like, okay, here's something that I can do something about, because this is unlike Harvey Weinstein, you know, where he's a super powerful guy that has like a multi-decade history of harassing and controlling and abusing women. Here's a guy who was on a date. He wanted to sleep with this woman he was on a date with. He had an agenda. He was pressuring her. And, you know, this is something that I think a lot of guys, if they look back on their own dating history, probably have something like that in their history. It may not be forcing a woman. It may not be violence. But being that guy who just won't quit, he's like, I want to sleep with you. I'm not gonna take no for an answer, basically. And honestly, I've been, an a-hole. I don't know if we can swear on the podcast or not, but I saw
no,
myself
that was
a little
actually
bit.
Okay. We just abbreviated a little bit.
Okay. So I saw myself there and I was like, okay, this is not okay. You know, the times have changed. If that was a normalized thing for the guy to be the one who was always like, all right, let's make this happen. Like, you know, we're going to do this tonight. That's not okay anymore. So I decided to create a pledge for men called the Consent Pledge, where men publicly commit to practice what is called affirmative consent or enthusiastic consent, which a lot of people haven't heard of, actually, and we can talk about it today. But it's basically a commitment to proactively check in and make sure that your partner actually wants to be having the sexual activity that's happening, to ask beforehand, and to not assume that the absence of a no means a yes, to actually get a proactive yes, and also not to pressure anybody to accept a no or a, you know, I don't want to do this immediately, rather than treat that as like the beginning of a bargaining process.
I love it. And, you know, I went to the website, on the online for the consent. Tell people where they can find the consent.
Sure. It's consentpledge.com, consentpledge.com. That will lead you there to a link. There's a link there to a change.org petition. Now, we're not petitioning anyone except ourselves. But change.org is a well-known platform for doing online campaigns and petitions. And so I'm wanting guys to commit to this. There's also a gender neutral one, so that anybody of any gender orientation can sign it. But the reason I'm focusing on guys, and particularly primarily hetero men who are interested in women, is that that's clearly, from reading the Me Too stories, where the brunt of the problem is. And of course, consent is important for everyone of every orientation. But I think we have a crisis of men not respecting women's sexual boundaries. And I want to be a part from the man's side of changing that.
Excellent. Now, you know, on this website, I'm looking at it right now because I just loved it. There are some pretty amazing questions. You have sort of an FAQ here, and there, I think number 8 kind of took the award. But won't following this consent pledge ruin erotic and romantic tension, kill spontaneity and passion, destroy the mood, and make sex formulaic and contractual? And anyways, most women don't want to be asked, hey, can I kiss you? Can I touch you here? Etc. They want to be ravished passionately, just like in the movies. They want us to know what they want, and they think we're weak, unsexy, and less of a man if we have to ask. I'm sorry. That just took the cake right there. So you had a great response, but tell us what that response was.
Sure. So when you see in the movies, erotic or romantic movies, or you read a novel, you know, 50 Shades of Grey. I have actually read it. One of the few guys who has.
Why?
You know, romance novels, erotic novels. You know, what you see is that moment where there's a smoldering look and the guy just, you know, ravishes the woman and pushes her up against the wall and it's passionate and clothes are flying off and there's fireworks. And you know what? That is great. We all want that and we all should have that. The thing is, though, that those are fantasies. Those are movies. And as we know, movies aren't always the best guide for how we should act outside of movies. And, you know, you don't want to drive the way a lot of car chase movies drive, for example. So the one adjustment we have to make to that fantasy is to realize that that kind of instant, aggressive, hard-driving, forceful seduction is great when you know somebody and you know their boundaries and you know that they want you back and you know that they want that level of intensity. But when you are first getting to know someone, let's say you're on a first date, you don't actually know if they want to be pushed up against the wall. You don't know if they want their blouse ripped open, right? They call them bodice rippers, the romance novels. You don't know if they want their bodice ripped open. You don't actually know that stuff. And so what affirmative consent says is that you should ask. You should actually either verbally ask, or in some cases it's so obvious from the body language that you can tell. But even in those cases, I mean, you've got to be careful. And so all this stuff about, like, is this going to make it too robotic? Is this going to kill the mood? The concept of affirmative consent was started at a place called Antioch College, which is a small liberal arts college, I believe in Ohio, in 1991. And they kind of had a set of rules where you did have to follow it fairly mechanically. At every step of physical escalation, the person desiring the escalation had to verbally ask, may I kiss you? May I take your shirt off? All the way up to intercourse. And that idea has taken a while to percolate through the culture. And now it's actually state law in California and New York that this procedure for getting consent must be followed on college campuses in California and New York. It's also looking likely that
it
will be.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's looking likely that it will be national law in the entire nation of Sweden. And people, I think, are rightly concerned. They're like, is this going to turn sex into a legalistic negotiation? There's jokes. There's videos online kind of making fun of this that shows people bringing lawyers into the bedroom and negotiating contracts. And that's clearly not what we want. The thing that I say is, you know, it's not necessarily about asking at every juncture robotically. It's about creating an atmosphere where your partner knows that you care about consent. They know that you're checking in, and specifically, they know that they are empowered to say stop and no, and that you will respect that no, and that you'll stop and you won't pressure them, which is exactly the opposite of what Aziz Ansari did, where she was voicing a lot of discomfort and disinterest in various ways, and he kind of just kept trying to seduce her and pressure her. So yeah, that's off the table. That's a no-no. And creating an atmosphere specifically where a woman feels like her no is going to be welcome and honored and appreciated.
Well, you know, when you bring up women, one of the other questions here was, what about women's role in all of this? Shouldn't women take responsibility and exercise agency to make sure their own activity is consensual while on date? Shouldn't they just leave if they don't like something? And you had a really great response to that, too.
Yeah, so I think fundamentally this is a men's problem. Men are doing this. Men need to change. I have no question about that in my mind. And no woman is at fault for being victimized. It's not a woman's fault. It's a man. If a man does that, it's a man's fault. And in a dating context, not a workplace harassment, not a you know, a violent encounter, but a dating context where a new couple is negotiating what they may or may not want to do sexually that night. And by negotiating, I don't mean like a contract. I mean just figuring it out as two people. And if there's alcohol involved, which is frequently the case on dates, I think all parties should be responsible for voicing their own boundaries and for making absolutely certain that the other person knows what the boundaries are. And we have a longstanding culture that has systematically suppressed both women's desires and their boundaries. And I imagine this is something you've discussed before on your podcast. And, you know, I don't need to, you have a female audience, so I don't need to lecture your women about this because they already know about it. But the main cultural point is that culturally we have, you know, told women, you know, your sexual desires are not okay. And you need to be ashamed if you are sexually desirous. That means you're a quote unquote slut. And because of that climate, a lot of women are kind of disconnected from their desires. And the flip side of that is when you're disconnected from your desire, you're also disconnected from what you don't want. And so as a culture, we've kind of made it the man's job to drive the sexual escalation. And if you see, you know, every movie has this and every rom-com, and it's always the man chasing the woman. So I would like to foster a culture where that courtship script is no longer the case, and that women can voice their desires as well, that women can chase men just as much as men chase women, and women can be really clear, talk super clear beforehand about what they want and they don't want, and they're not going to be called a slut, and they're not going to be shamed for their desires or their boundaries.
I love that. I really think that that's fabulous, because this way, you know, we can start taking some of these stereotypes and kick them to the curb, which is it's always got to be about the guy doing the, you know, the whole chase after thing. I mean, it really, it's very sexy to have a man and a woman interact together instead of just sort of a one-sided thing. You know, there's another thing you brought up, and by the way, I thought the FAQ, you know, all the questions, facts and questions that you put on the consent page, this website, were really, really good. I thought you did an outstanding job of describing and explaining and clarifying. There was one in particular that really caught my attention in a big way, because we talk about trauma on the Her podcast a lot, meaning that, you know, women have all kinds of levels of trauma. One could have been physical / sexual trauma in a big way. And what's interesting is you talk about triggering potentially in a interaction between a man and woman, the freeze and fawn response, which is the counterpart to the fight and flight response. Describe what that whole scenario is about, because a lot of guys may not be fully aware of the fact that the woman in front of them, you know, who they may know somewhat or whatever, may actually have a history of trauma they know nothing about, and that it can be fairly easily triggered, which is why you have to be mindful and pay attention. So why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. And the first thing I want to say is I'm not a, you know, a psychologist or a therapist. You're the expert on these things much more than I am. And, you know, I've read a lot about this to understand it. And, you know, basically we've all heard about the fight or flight response, where something feels like a threat, something feels uncomfortable, and either we're going to confront it directly, which is fight, or we're going to bounce. We're going to get the hell out of there, which is flight. Well, a lot of people don't realize that there's actually another F response, or pair of F responses, which is freeze and fawn. So very frequently when someone has been traumatized, in the past, and that could be a physical trauma like being beaten or forcibly raped, or an emotional trauma like having an abusive relationship. The way people deal with that is to freeze, meaning their body, they kind of go out of their body. And I think the mechanism there is that if you are forced to be in a situation, one of the ways you can handle that is to dissociate from your body and kind of just leave emotionally, psychologically. Another response, which is generally more common among women than men, although everybody has done this, is the fawn response, which is basically, okay, there's a threat here. I'm going to play nice. I'm going to smile. I'm going to go along with it, because if I don't, I might get beaten. I might get hit. So if somebody has a past of having been abused or raped or harassed or any of the horrible things we've been reading about in Me Too, and you know, one of the things I learned is this is far more common than I realized, and that most women have something like this in their background. What that means is that has created a whole set of patterns and responses in their physiology, in their nervous system, that is kind of ready to be activated if and when there's a perceived threat. And so the idea of a trigger is that even a relatively small stimulus, like not a knife being put in your face, but maybe a guy who's being a little overbearing on a date, can trigger an emotional response that is related to, you know, a much worse precipitating situation in the past, and then have the woman freeze and fawn, which is basically just go along with it. And I've read a lot of articles from women who say, I was on the date, the guy was being pushy, he really made it clear that he wanted to have sex, he wasn't listening to my nose, and even though he didn't force me, even though he didn't hold me down, even though I technically could have left, I didn't. I just went along with it. And that is the freeze and fawn response. And I think that's why it's so important to move away from the no means no standard, which is how consent has been established for eons, which is basically it's the woman's job to say no. And if she doesn't say no, then technically it was consensual. Well, the problem with that is if she's in that freeze and fawn response, she might not actually totally want what's going on, but she's in a kind of trauma response such that she doesn't feel empowered to say no, so she just goes along with it. And that's not ideal. We don't want people just going along with sex that they don't want. We want people to be empowered to say, like, no, actually, I don't want this. Let's do something else. I don't want this thing.
I love it. You know, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, at the end of the day, this isn't some simple thing. You know, it's not like,
right,
okay, now, can everyone just play nice? And can everyone just sort of get it? No. I mean, it's everything from, quite frankly, not really understanding how complex the person is in front of you, the fact they may have this trauma history, that you can trigger them with maybe even the smallest thing. You just don't know. And that's why I would say respecting the other person and making certain that both of you in the best of all worlds are still paying attention up, present enough, which means that's code for you're not snockered, right? I mean, come on. If you're first meeting someone, take a little responsibility. This is not the time to put a straw in a wine bottle. Sit down and have a conversation. Does that make sense? I mean, am I asking too much?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the flashpoint for these problems right now is college campuses. And there's a tremendous problem on college campuses with assault, with women having sex that they didn't want, they didn't feel comfortable with. Why do we need to have our first sexual encounter with someone happen when we're both sloppy drunk? Like it doesn't make sense to me. It's like if you're really attracted to someone when you're wasted and they're wasted, that's fine. Maybe have a kiss. Maybe have a little makeout. You don't need to go farther than that the first time. I mean, this maybe sounds old-fashioned and conservative, but I think there's a lot to be said for waiting till the second or third date before going further.
And trying not to always be, you know, around, you know, God knows, not drugs, but, you know, alcohol and the rest of it, and sort of taking it too far. You know, this is one of the reasons why I think one of the coolest places to match up or do your thing is either over coffee or tea. Hello. Quite safe and lovely, number one. Number two, hello, everyone out there who likes to do physical activity. Why don't you, you know, do a run together, take a walk together, you know, meet up at some kind of cool, you know, do a Tough Mudder and see what you look like, all muddy and nasty looking.
Yeah.
And get down to it. It really works. You know, I met my husband at the gym. We're both athletes. And, you know, I mean, we were kind of like the antithesis of meeting at the bar. We were all sweaty and, you know, working out. And I certainly wasn't like made up to the nines. I was sitting there doing my thing. And, you know, it's just safe ground. It's wonderful. You're surrounded by other people and it's fun and you're being real and authentic. You're not just, you know, putting on a facade and getting snockered because you just don't feel comfortable with who you are. So I say there are too many other options, you know, so take them up on that. I mean, you know, and do it during the day, for God's sake. It doesn't always have to be, and I quote, let's do a drink. You know what I mean? Like, that's so old fashioned, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I completely agree with everything you said. And I would say there's a wider cultural point here as well, which is that we have a culture that generally shames people in their sexual desire, especially women, with the whole slut shaming thing I was mentioning. And so part of what happens then is people feel they need to have alcohol to get into the mood, to get over their inhibitions. And the problem with that is that it's a temporary removal of inhibitions. So you're drinking the alcohol. Oh, you feel so free. You feel so wonderful. And then you go do a bunch of things that actually you don't feel great about once you're sober again. So I think it's, first of all, we should have a culture that, you know, contribute to a culture where we can actually talk about our sexual desires without having to be intoxicated to feel courageous enough to do that. We shouldn't need liquid courage to just talk with people and say, Hey, I'm attracted to you. This is what I'd be interested in with you. It's so foreign. And yet I think we're going to have to learn that quickly to avoid, you know, all the Me Too stories that we're hearing about.
Yeah. You know, I kind of go back to, you know, like Sex and the City type of, you know, interviews that went on and, you know, all those segments. And they're always in a bar. They're always drinking. There's always clinking of the glasses. And I'm like, come on, girlfriends, you know, take a walk in the flipping park, will you? Geez, you got that Central Park there in New York, you know, and that's where it is. I want everyone to know that we are talking to Michael Ellsberg, and you can learn more about his wonderful work by going to www.ellsberg, that's ellsberg.com. And please go to his consentpledge.com website. That's consentpledge.com. And he is the author of The Power of Eye Contact. Oh, yeah. Such a great book. And please, everyone out there, take what Michael has just said very seriously into heart. And women, grab your guy and have him sign up this damn consent. And make certain that everyone knows about this. Let's spread the message that Michael has started us really paying attention to. And I have to congratulate you, Michael, on really getting the ball rolling on this. Well done. Hear, hear. Kudos to you. And thank you so much for being on the Her podcast. And remember, everyone out there, please catch every episode of Her by just hitting subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And then just take a moment or two and rate and review us, because we're waiting to hear from you. Your feedback is absolutely golden. Oh, heck with it. It's platinum. Love to hear your comments. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peek MD and Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.